My name is Jeff Young. I'm the technology editor at the Chronicle of Higher Education, which is great fun, and then I get to go around to college campuses all the time. And I've seen a lot of lectures good and bad, and I am excited to be here for what I hope gets a conversation going both in this room and actually beyond in a website that I'm going to tell you about. But I want to first address something kind of obvious, and I'm sure there are probably hecklers already on Twitter, in that if I'm talking about the death of the lecturer or if the lecturer is dead, how come we're sitting here listening to what is can only be called a lecture? I could pretend it's not, but I'm not going to do that. But I am going to ask for your indulgence as I go through some points that I want to cover and hopefully, like I said, get a discussion going. I think the other dangerous thing that I'm going to try to do is invite you to turn your phones on, or at least a few of you. Does anyone know how to work the countdown timer on their smartphone? I know I use mine for cooking. If you nodded just then, could you open up your cell phone and set a countdown timer right now for 18 minutes? Just bear with me. Can we synchronize it on the count of three? Those of you who are flicking around, you guys ready? We'll do this. We'll count down to 18 minute countdown timer starting in 3, 2, 1. Cool. Okay, so that means some cell phones are on. Please don't like pick up the phone and have your call with us in here. But if your phone does go off, like if somebody needs to reach you and I ask you to turn it on, probably the only speaker at this event that's asking you to turn your phones on, please we'll kind of count that as just the way that lectures are going on today, because as we know, students don't always turn their phones off. So what I want to first start out and just say why I'm talking about this topic. It's not to beat up on professors. It's not to beat up on people who stand up and lecture. It is actually to look at the quality of higher education. I know that it's broadly titled The Lecture, but my focus, as I mentioned, is on higher education and the quality of college teaching at the Chronicle of Higher Education. But I do think there are implications beyond just colleges for thinking through what it means to teach. What is teaching? What is good teaching? How does it work? And what kind of things can be done? So there's a report that came out about a year and a half ago, and those in the higher ed space probably are familiar with it. It was called Academically Adrift. And from the title, you might guess that this study was not a positive finding about college teaching. It's a book-length study, and it tracked 2,300 college students from 4 years of college around the country. And the question was, it's a simple experiment, but one that I think is very pertinent. So what happened for these 2,300 people from when they started to when they finished? What kind of learning outcome did they have? Now, the numbers were not that great. Oh, the subtitle, if you can't read it, is Limited Learning on College Campuses. So that kind of tells you the findings. The number blown up in big font here is the percentage of students who – it's 45% showed no significant improvement in learning in the first 2 years of college. That's nearing half of the students. I'm sure they had fun and went to a lot of parties and had some in-campus experiences that enriched them. But as far as the learning, that number is definitely not encouraging. Also, by 4 years, so that was 2 years, 4 years of college, 36% showed no significant improvement in learning. This is over a third. So this is obviously you can look at the study about how they measure all these things, but the point that they found is that not just the lecture, but all the teaching going on at colleges is just not working for some students. For some, it works great, and some of the lectures are great, obviously. And so you might think, okay, well, that's just the whole learning experience. Not everybody does a lecture, right? Not everybody does standing in front of the room and lecturing. Well, actually, college sort of is lecture land. There was a study done that showed that 76% of professors, this is a nationwide study of 172,000 professors were surveyed around the country, and it found that 76% of them self-identified as lecturers mainly. So lectures are really the thing that most undergraduate students experience. Of course, there are wonderful seminars on Chaucer with 20 students sitting around and everyone talks, but those are not the a typical experience, or certainly not the only experience that college students are having. And of course, you might think, well, my lectures are interactive. In my lectures, there's all kinds of time for students to talk. The same study of professors found that in a 50-minute class period, only an average of 3 minutes was devoted to question and answer. And of course, this is the 3 minutes at the very last of the class when students are ready to get out of there. So the interactivity of the lecture format in most cases is not interactive, even if professors do make an attempt to do that. I will say a caveat about this study. It's actually a bit old. It was in 98. But I can't find a study done more recently. And my experience in covering colleges is that there hasn't been a huge shift in the number of lectures going on since then. My sense is that it's roughly the same today. So college teaching is not as good as some people might think. Now, of course, some people that are at – I mean, this is a general statement that, of course, not everybody thinks the same way about it. But I would challenge that no matter how good you think college teaching is, it's probably not quite as good as that even. And that's an issue, I think, a policy issue for college leaders and for, I think, something that we shouldn't just shy away from. Even though our college system is great, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't address the fact that there are indicators that it's not as good as it could be. And of course, one thing that people are asking this question more and more outside the academy is because the cost of college is going up higher than the rate of inflation and faster than inflation. And so this is a chart that ran in a book called DIYU that some of you might be familiar with, but it shows the red line being college tuition, and you can just see at a glance that other things, new cars, food, apparel, are going up, but they're not going up as fast. And so the price of college is getting to that point where people are like, wait, what goes on in there again? So the lecture as a model is old. It's about as old as you get, I guess. If you want to know anything, you go on Wikipedia. So I flipped onto Wikipedia and found out. Lecture, it sort of comes from a technology which was really hot at some point, which was the book. And the word itself means to read aloud. So that is the origin of it. And this is an image that is from the 1500s. You can see someone doing something that, honestly, this room is very similar to that room, except for the lecturer does not. Those ornate lecture stands are cool. But also to show that things have not changed, look at this guy. I think this is something that still happens in college classes that I visit. And so you see that the lecture format is much the same. Now, of course, so that's good, right? Tried and true. And some people might leave this room thinking that, and that's great. But the fact is, and I don't have to tell a South by Southwest audience this, but just bear with me. The other parts of our society have changed because of technology. This is a fancy network map. The internet is now overlaid on our lives. People are probably tweeting right now. You're surfing the internet. Every experience that we have, it seems like one by one in sectors of experience is changing because of technology. I just challenge you to think about, you know, banking and 20 years ago versus today. Do you see a bank teller? Even things like, of course, entertainment. Think of the way we consume television, and it really is different. I mean, just because of Netflix and streaming and TiVos, it almost doesn't matter what setup you have at home. You don't necessarily think of your favorite TV show as something you have to schedule your life around to catch it on Thursday night at 8 or else you miss it. And so it causes a shift in the way we do media, of course, retail, even somebody recently pointed out to me, farming, very different today because of technology. And so you can go through one by one. And of course, there's lectures which are now infused with technology. This is my version of the lecture today as we've wired it up. It's the same. We basically just tacked on the stuff that people have now, students and professors, because of consumer technology. Yes. Can we store that question and get back to it? Because that's a great point that, maybe professors know everything I'm saying and they're basically sort of like, yeah, this is what I do for reasons of my own. And it is a complex system. So let me get to that because I think that's a great point. I want to go through some technologies that are killing the lecture, right? So let's just put in air quotes this killing thing. Just bear with me. And of course, the first one's PowerPoint, right, which I'm using right now. So ha. But what I mean is not the kind of PowerPoint that's the good PowerPoint. I think everyone kind of feels like there's a there's a PowerPoint karaoke or info karaoke where people read the screen to you, and we've all sat through those. People are nodding their head. It happens a lot in college classrooms, I'll get to some evidence of that later, but students certainly know, every student I talk to pretty much says this PowerPoint abuse, as they call it, happens. And just to step back a minute, I want to kind of put in a framework around what's going on with the technologies of the classroom. So the chalkboard, you know, which I guess there is a chalkboard if I move that. Well, I'm not going to, but the blackboard there. But there is a chalkboard even in this room still. And, you know, Einstein used it, so that was good. But the experience of the chalkboard was very analog. It was different. In most cases, professors would act out this think through the process and show you what they're doing as they go. It was a performative event. And then we had a very good upgrade in many ways, which was the overhead projector. So, again, just bear with me here. I know this is old technology that is like showing 8-track cassettes and being like, isn't this exciting? But the overhead projector was this thing that let you prepare in advance and have the professor, you know, draw on some acetate and then have them in a folder and come in and not have to write out on the board every time. And, of course, it was a little bit hard to read handwriting. I know mine is terrible. Some professors, those mad professors have bad handwriting. So the all this gear that colleges spent millions of dollars on to make smart classrooms, which of course, you know, they show on the tour and are the very standard now with the projector we have here and the computer gear and all these plugs and wires. I think though, it's still not a revolution. Like I said, it's the tacked on tech. What it is, it's better. It's like what I think of as going from standard definition television to high definition television. It definitely helps when you're watching sporting events and makes you feel more engaged. But in this case of lectures, it makes the lettering a little clearer when it's typed out. But it's not a revolutionary change in the way things are done. But now, this is SlideShare. This slide deck is already on SlideShare. And now in college classrooms, of course, it's Blackboard or other LMSs. The slides are available instantly. And the first question asked by many students in classes I hear is, are these going to be downloadable, these lecture slides? And then maybe I don't have to come as much. So now it's kind of developed into a TiVo. So now, obviously, with the TiVo at home, that's when your experience of media can change. That's when you start changing your life patterns so you don't have to be home at 8 o'clock on Thursday night to watch those shows. You can just TiVo them, watch them on Hulu, watch them on Netflix, download them, stream them. And now there's a move at colleges to doing that with the PowerPoint presentations, and as I'll get to in a minute, even with video in some colleges. So what it does, though, is why am I saying all this? One of the things is it sort of changes students' conception of what's happening in the classroom, I would argue. So now it's really a piece of media instead of some event that started out being this thing at the chalkboard that was sort of acting out the thought process and the professor in action and really seeing something performative. And professors, I think, many professors I talk to still think of it that way. They think of what they're doing as that exciting, vibrant thing because they're on their feet, they're talking, they're energetic. But the students now see it as slides they can download, as like something that's canned, that's in a can, even if so if they miss it, they can just get it later. And you know that, why not think like that? It's the way they think of other pieces of media. So one student really crystallized for me when I read a student newspaper article by this University of Maryland College Park student called named Dikunle Samad. And I expect you can't read this, but I'll tell you the editorial was basically that professors are putting themselves out of business if they're just offering us all these great downloads. He liked these downloads, but he said he's one of those that asks the first day of class, can I get these lectures? And he said, and I will read, this is the one thing I'll painfully read, we don't desire CDs, we want the music they hold. We don't enjoy reading newspapers, we like the content they produce. Similarly, we don't pay tuition for classes or lectures. We want the knowledge they provide. Music, then newspapers, will professors be next? So I think this just crystallized for me the attitude of students. This is just media, so let me. I can come. I can maybe download it later. That's kind of the way they think about it. And then it makes you think, like, is it really that way? Has it been that way for a long time? And maybe professors didn't recognize it, even back in the slide, the acetate overhead projector era. So yes.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they're not doing the note-taking. They're not getting that.
The moment of translation, right.
Translation, putting it in their words, writing it themselves.
Kinesthetic, that's a great word.
Yeah.
So there is some research that shows that if you translate it into your own words or even just write the same words, that you're getting some memory benefit perhaps.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was, if that's relating to the study, that we talked about.
The academically adrift. I think there's probably something to that. It's certainly worth thinking about. And of course, the convenience factor, and a lot of times I go to a session and I'm sort of glad if the notes are available so I don't have to take the notes. So it is a convenience, and PowerPoint. So this is something, there's Edward Tufte and people who say PowerPoint is making argument bad. But in a way, it's also just the convenience of it makes us a little bit lazy. And there are many, the second row. Yeah.
World-class universities, by paying tuition at Stanford, it's not about the knowledge, it's about the experience. And you miss that if you just skip class and go to share something on
iTunes. It is about the experience. And so if it is about the experience, then are people maximizing that through if they just do it the same old way, I guess, is the question that I think is raised by all this technology. And it's not even if you think the lecture is okay, I feel like the student attitudes are getting to where you're saying, and also these market forces on the expense and the idea that there's another free one. So yeah, that's a great point. So the second technology, and I'll try to move a little faster so we can get to more discussion, is video and YouTube. Of course, that gets at the idea that we can watch other things. And I would argue, and he spoke yesterday, that one of the beginnings of this really killing the lecture was Al Gore. In 2006, his film, An Inconvenient Truth, was probably the most expensive PowerPoint presentation ever filmed. It was $1 million, about roughly $1 million budget on this movie. And he didn't use PowerPoint, he used Keynote, but right, same thing. And there are other, obviously everyone knows TED, but this is the most recent TED conference. Check that stage out. That's pretty rad. This is different than the room we're in right now. And this room costs a lot of money, there's no lie, like here. But check that out. Now we've got like Hollywood or Broadway, right? And the stage is perfect, and the TED letters probably cost more than this room, and the multimedia. These lectures are produced like a year in advance so that they can be perfect. But guess what? College students watch those as well. I hear more and more students are up on this. There's a new lecture posted every day, and actually. In 2006, the same year as Inconvenient Truth, was when TED started offering the free lectures online. So this is sort of a recent phenomenon of being able to see these incredibly high production value talks. So, and then somebody already mentioned MIT OpenCourseWare. Walter Lewin is one of the best professors probably doing physics teaching anywhere. He's at MIT. If you, I'm just going to click through and mute this, but he does this one experiment in one of his classes where he moves aside all the gear and hangs from a pendulum from the ceiling of the room and goes back and forth and has his students time him on that giant clock. Let me see if I can get to just the right point. And, some professors wouldn't be able to do that because the room doesn't have the gear. Others may be unwilling, do you have to hire a stunt double to be a good lecturer these days? I will not be hanging from any lecture thing right now and swinging. I wish. But so now this is what's out there. People can see those for free online. So it's competition, right? Free. And the other thing is I mentioned lecture capture. Now universities are installing systems to broadcast the lectures. Over 60% or about 60% of college CIOs said that they are looking into putting in lecture capture systems, which basically just means right now someone could be recording me and then offering as the whole lecture to students watch it, not just the PowerPoint. PowerPoint slides. Now, there are some professors who are worried about this development and say that if you have a recording of a class, those periods where there are Q&A, are we putting our students in a position where they are at risk if those lectures are put online for free or if somehow they're saved? What if some student asks a question about politics or expressed a viewpoint that later is shown as they're running for their confirmation hearing for the Supreme Court? Or, you know, Sandra Sotomayor had a talk she gave at a college. The video cropped up years later, and obviously she wasn't a student in that case. She was making a public talk. But it raises these questions of, is there a sacred space issue? All right. So I've now talked for 18 minutes, and everyone's just now starting to be bored and tired and sick of the format, whether you know it or not, according to some studies. And that's why TED Talks are 18 minutes or less. I mean, they didn't just pick that out of the air. And so what I'm going to do right now is, if you'll indulge me again, if there's enough people, I believe there are enough people to do this. If you would – I have an assignment for you, an in-class assignment right now. So it's really easy, though. It'll take five minutes. Maybe. Let's pay attention just in case. So I want everyone to choose a partner, or you have three people, and actually just I'll stop talking and talk to each other about a lecturer that you had that was good. And if you don't remember one, well, that's telling. Tweet that. So, and if you have access to something you can tweet, do that. If not, just put it in your mind and that's cool. And we're going to do this for like 3 minutes and then I'm going to start talking again. So I will stop. All right, my timer just went off. If you guys haven't, please tweet something. We'll hopefully you can stick around and talk more afterwards if we're inspired to do so. But I'm very excited by that. I love the buzz of that. Just hearing the room from where I stand, it's sort of better than me talking. Let me tell you. So I've seen a couple. As you guys tweet them, if you haven't already, the first couple that I saw come in, one was the lecturer's passion for the topic is the decisive factor. We agree. Another is humor and prepare for life, not career. Make lectures interesting. My undergraduate painting 3 professor would read recipes while I painted, and I cooked them each night after class. All right. So charisma, passion, originality involve students. I hope that these will keep coming in and we can get back to these as we go here. But so hopefully that will keep us all awake. Exactly. Thank you. I'm going to jump back to where we are. So to review, here's what we've done so far. And so now let me tell you what else is happening, of course, in classrooms, which now, if I can get this to go, I'm going to mute the volume. So, of course, guess who else has cameras, even if there isn't one installed? Students have cameras, and some are using the classroom as a way to do pranks and run around in superhero costumes. And because they know that they're on film or can be on film, and here they've got an audience of their friends that are going to be really impressed by their stunts. So if you just search online for lecture prank, you can find literally dozens and dozens of these. So this is not something that is just one campus. Let me move this cursor here. Oh, there's one. A lot of them have the same kind of gorillas and superheroes. There's the Flash. Oh, here's the Hulk. Yeah. This goes on for a while. There's a banana and the gorilla. Gorilla suits are easy to rent, I think. A pirate. You can make one of those at home. This is almost over. But it's fun, right? Students are having a good time. Here's one where the lecturer really didn't let it stand. The professor definitely chased down the chicken. There's a ghost. Okay. And that one, Ghostbusters, came to the rescue. So the fact is, whether you hook up the video or not, students are using video in the classroom, and it can be a disruptive thing. It's kind of shows what's going on and how students are perceiving things. So the third technology killing a lecture is the thing that we just used to tweet. Let me just go over a couple quick statistics that are pretty recent from this year's ECAR study of campus administration. It's 3,000 students surveyed on campuses across the country. 87% have a laptop. So these are four-year colleges. That's pretty standard. We're talking about you can expect your student to have access to a laptop. 55%, which is what I was surprised by, have a smartphone. That seemed high to me. And 8% have an iPad. And this was done earlier in a few months ago, but I'm sure it's growing by the day. So, and I think someone nodded on that. So some professors are none too happy with what this means when the classroom's going. You know, I just allowed encouraged people to have their phones on, but it's not always encouraged. This professor heard a cell phone ringing, which you can sort of hear right now. And he... This got 5 million hits on YouTube, what's about to happen just here. So he heard a student's phone go off in the front of the class. The guy took the call. Yeah, somebody said good for him. Yeah, okay. So it's now the question... The question is now, do you ban the equipment? It's something that most professors have to wrestle with now. Yeah.
Going back to my earlier question.
Sure.
I think in a lot of ways, students are simply returning the faith. Who are thoroughly disengaged are kind of like, keep up with me.
Yep.
And then some students turn around, okay, fine. You're disengaged with me. I'm going to be disengaged with you. We'll sit here together for 55 minutes and we'll call it good.
And people talk in terms of grade inflation, and the Academically Adrift report mentioned this, that there is this feedback cycle. Of course, evaluations are by students. This is something that the administrators, your boss, might see if you're a professor. And so the way that you understand whether teaching is good is whether the student said in anonymous feedback whether you're a good lecturer or a good teacher. And of course, some professors notice that when you give higher grades, you get better results. So that goes to your point of is there just a kind of a gentleman's agreement or whatever you will with that lets you say, like, we're just going to go with this. It's working.
Well, isn't it also partially just the whole
19-year-olds?
19-year-olds or junior high.
Sure.
You know, back when junior high, it was whether girls could have combs in their pockets because we'd just be playing with our hair. Or, you know, I mean,
So that is a good question that I think is one that we should always be thinking as we go through this. Is this just an old thing where we're just being like old-fashioned, and but actually things are fine and things will all just adjust? Like in the early days of the telephone, there were anxieties about this and that and whether it would ruin lives and memories and this and that and the other. But obviously – so it's a question. I don't know the answer, but luckily I don't have to have the answer. It's just the questions. Yeah.
It's no different than in corporate meetings.
Oh. Oh, so you're training – we're training students for the workforce. That's awesome. Yeah, in the back. Yeah, did you see the chart of the – it's a very expensive product. Yeah, more than South by Southwest.
We don't know why that student answered his phone. It could have been his kid's school. We
Yep.
And that cuts down on students using cell phones and computers for reasons they shouldn't be. I don't need to grab their phones and smash them on the ground. I pay attention and engage with my students. Not that hard. And then
that's thanks. Well, and there's some There's also something about the internet where somebody – there's some rumor on some blog that that's all staged anyway. So you never know, right? But that does happen. I don't know about the slamming down. But it sort of illustrates the point. And I think you make a great point too. And this is a – it's basically a tough problem. There's not one single answer. And so I want to just kind of keep all these things going and just in the interest of time for bigger discussion. My fourth and final tech killing the lecture is really Web 2.0. I held up these two companies as examples, a nonprofit and a company. But obviously, and very quickly, it's somebody even mentioned this already, the idea that the expert is hard to get to is sort of gone. We can definitely find an expert online, Wikipedia. Now the idea of having to sit with the one person who has the book is outdated. And so that massive online open course, MOOC to its friends, Sebastian Thrun, and somebody even mentioned this, these professors that are really going out on their own. Sebastian Thrun recently started a company called Udacity after he had 160,000 students sign up for his free course online. His computer science course. And so he basically now is starting a company saying, like, I don't need Stanford to get this. I can just go through my name brand and go directly to students. And so I think it's another challenge, another force acting on colleges to say, maybe you can't just keep doing it exactly the same way, even if you'd like to. So I put out a call on our website. If you guys hadn't seen it, I actually had homework before you came to class today, which is to watch a 2-minute video. But did anyone watch it actually? Okay, some, that's great. Thank you. So I put out a call, and I'm actually hearing from students. I would love to have more, and I'm going to keep the kind of invitation open. But some of them, the majority of the students who did respond were very negative about the lecture, talked about PowerPoint abuse, talked about the PowerPoint karaoke that they experience. I'm just going to play a little bit of it since some people have seen it. I got some rights-free music I'm excited about.
Learning is more than the professor reading notes. I mean, if that's all they were doing, then why don't we just print it out?
I had one professor that read word for word through his PowerPoints. And, I mean, that's just not the point of a PowerPoint. It's just, you know, it's just a different way of using technology. I don't think a lot of professors use it well too much a lot of the time, unfortunately.
I'm sick and tired of hearing my professors going off on tangents about their life story. Believe me, that's the key time when we like to tune out.
I realize that the only way that you actually learn in college is by being hands-on.
The classes that I had that were interactive, I definitely did a lot better.
You know, teenagers and at least college students' attention spans are a lot shorter these days. So when you expect a student to sit through a 90-minute lecture, you're losing their attention.
Our professors ask us every day to think outside the box and come up with new and unique ideas. Well, I feel like it should go both ways.
So I'm going to go move on because I'm going to get to some of the things that they're saying that the professors are doing. So I'm going to try to quickly go through turning the from negative to positive and talk about some ways in which professors are trying some new things to sort of reboot the lecture. And obviously, one of the same technologies that's killing the lecture is saving it, luckily, YouTube and video and the cheap access to video. Who has heard of the Khan Academy? So I'm not going to go – this is fascinating. There's like a TED Talk he did that got millions of hits. I hear he was on 60 Minutes the other day, Sal Khan. So this is obviously the Oprah moment for him. It's a household word. And he – if you probably know the story just very quickly, he's a hedge fund analyst. He's like 34 years old and he – got laid off, and so he was tutoring his cousins in another city, making little YouTube videos for them, and he basically got some comments from people say, I like your videos. So he decided to make it a nonprofit, and now he's the most popular education provider on YouTube. He's never been a teacher in a college. He's got no PhD. He doesn't know anything about teaching except for that he's really good at it. So he makes these videos that are no longer than 10 minutes or 11 minutes, I think, is his max. So he's got it even lower than 18. And he just goes through bite by bite. And so you can go on the site. There are thousands of these. But everything is really, really, you know, fine-grained. So if you want to learn – forget the lecture about, you know, chemistry one, lecture one. This is basically like concept by concept and then example by example in those concepts. And he even gives you a badge if you do enough algebra problems. He's got some interactive exercises. So you can get a degree, so to speak, from Khan Academy. It's not accredited, obviously. But it's an interesting format that's challenging the lecture, but also offering a solution because he's saying, why not flip the classroom? I'm seeing some head nodded. Inverted classroom, flip classroom is a buzzword that he talks about. A lot of people talk about, okay, now we have those videos. So why do the thing with the 15th century painting where we're all sitting in the room together? Why not use the class time to either literally watch his videos during class 10 minutes at a time, do the exercises, have the professor go around the room and be kind of a coach or guide on the side or some of these buzzwords. But with the technology, it actually is more, I think, only recently something that's actually doable. And now the info karaoke is the homework. And you come to class and you're not going to sit here and watch it, everyone together, because you can do it on your own time when you have time to watch the 11 minutes. And then you come to class and you do it that way. And so Virginia Tech, over 10 years ago, I believe now, did this. It's become a model for universities around the country with a math class, a basic math class. This is the lecture hall. So the other thing is, once you start doing this flipped classroom, why in the world do you do the classroom in this setup? It's really a costly thing, though, if we change the room. But we just built this room, right? It's great. So this is actually a math class. And just to let you know what's going on, these are pods of people doing exercises that are self-guided on the computer. And these red cups, it looks like you could drink beer later on with them. If you put a cup in the middle of the table, one of these roaming professors will come to your table and actually help you. And so these professors walk around with little lanyards saying they're the professor because they're all wearing jeans. And, you know, this is now the classroom. And basically the professors are on demand when they're needed. But if not, the computer's got it. Again, I'm not an advocate for any of this, but I think it's an interesting model that really – this is a Rose's department store that went out of business, and they turned it into a classroom. It's giant. I mean, you can't even see all this room in this picture. So that's one way the lecture is being saved. Another way is all that gear that I showed you, 87% with laptops, all those people with cell phones. Well, that's actually something that many colleges are trying to tap into. So this is a classroom that I took this picture at Purdue University all right, Purdue. So what they're doing there is this professor's taught the same class for 20 years, and some people have had this experience, and he said he volunteered for this because he was getting bored. He was bored with his own lecture and he wasn't going to let that be. So he actually tried this. And so he invited everyone. They made a little app that people could use their laptops, cell phones, or whatever to go through a portal and put questions out while things were going in real time. So the room is suddenly like this in a silent back channel. This is really catching on from what I'm hearing. A lot of people are nodding. I talked to a student who buzzed us all in to, with our badges, who has a professor who does this here at UT. So this is not some sort of like one professor somewhere doing it. It's starting to catch on as an idea of let's take advantage of all that tech that people have already, the classrooms wireless, all this money has been spent to try to have the – so they have two TAs that watch the – they had TAs anyway for the class. So they make the TAs monitor the Twitter feed and then they respond to people. Or they sometimes stop the lecture and be like, actually, no one understood what you just said. At Abilene Christian University, they've given everyone an iPhone and they've developed apps to do things like this. One of the things that they say worked is a nonprofit amazing race that they run on campus where the professor makes them go around to a scavenger hunt with their cell phones. I think they're doing this at the exhibit hall here, you know, scavenger hunt. So it's basically now you're not in the classroom at all, but you're learning through the cell phone. And here's the coolest idea that I've seen lately. Hold it up, and you know everyone knows what an iPad looks like. This one professor at a university, Eric Mazur, is now I believe he's at Harvard. He's basically developed a system where his students, he has them do these group projects, and he has kind of up to the minute intelligence on how well these students are doing. From let's say they just answered a question in right now, and half the students got it right and half of them got it wrong. Well, he would get on his dashboard on his iPad in real time that, you know, you got it wrong, sorry, but you got it right over here, the guys have been asking a lot of questions. So I'm going to match you two up, and for the next little part of class, you two are groups because he'll teach you. And so with this – and there's this thing that's been said of like the moneyballing of higher ed teaching where you just look at statistics differently. Don't just look at the grade on the assignments, but look at other ways that we can cull data from what students are already doing. There's another idea of using the textbook use. If you go on Blackboard and look at your textbook through Blackboard, which is done with ebooks, then professors can actually know before lecture whether – a lot of you looked at it or not. I can know how many pages you turned, how much time you spent with it, and I can start the class being like, I know no one did the reading, so we're going to go over the reading. Or I could be like, I actually know people seem to have done the reading. We're going to go on. So it's an interesting idea to update the lecture. And the third and final saving the lecture is this. Again, we're going through the same list of Web 2.0. And the Wikipedia is now basically – early on, there was a lot of skepticism in academia about Wikipedia and whether it was any good because it was perceived as everyone in their basement, just people who don't know anything making these things. But now we all know that actually a lot of smart people write Wikipedia entries. So they're actually partnering with schools. Wikimedia Foundation is helping them creating these guides for doing lesson plans where the students do as homework Wikipedia entries. And it's way faster feedback, and I hear it's actually harsher grading than the professor. Is if the community thinks that you wrote a bad Wikipedia entry, they'll just delete it. And they're not going to be like, oh, sorry for you because I know you're struggling. They're just going to be like, that wasn't up to our standards, so it's out. So the students are now challenged in a real-world problem. And this is something I probably should have revealed early on is that I definitely am not a full professor or anything. I'm a journalist, but I'm teaching this one class at Maryland's College Park in journalism the last couple of years. And so it's great. I get to see how hard all this is. It's so easy to stand up here and be like, lecture's dead, change your ways. So I have not got it figured out at all. But we make the students do – I co-teach it this semester with a photojournalist. We make the students make a blog. Everything's public. We make them agree. I know there's FERPA laws, but we make the students basically opt out of their FERPA for this class and say I'm willing to post my assignments publicly. And they post – it's a journalism class. They should be able to publish what they're doing. And so I tell them it should be up to the standards you would publish in the student newspaper. Don't be embarrassed by your work. And then we have them name it. So the Terps, the Maryland Terrapins, they named it Shell Shocked. This is their student blog. And one of the students designed it. I didn't design it. I just gave administrative access to somebody. I don't have time. And they actually did a way better job. I don't know how to do that. So the ideas are to let them use the tools that we're all using to take over a little bit and do the class. Now, of course, there's some things that we've tried that have gone terribly wrong. So I don't pretend to have all the answers, and I'm not exactly in the shoes of a professor. But I think that it's one exciting thing to use these Web 2.0 tools to try to mix up hands-on and lecture. So I'm going to show one last video, and then I'm going to open it up to questions in a minute. I ask, and this is not on the web, it's going to be on the website in a few minutes. This is a new one. I've gotten a lot of professors. I invited them to respond to that video that I showed you of the students kind of bitching. So the professors get their say in this video that we're about to put up. It's 3 minutes long, and you guys are the first to see it, if it works.
Students in the lecture hall, all to be able to get forth during a 90-minute class.
It's a biology prof.
Students complain that lectures are boring. They complain that they could read the PowerPoint slides and that faculty don't know what they were doing when they lectured. They complain that faculty don't know how to use technology. But lectures have been the common method of teaching in colleges for a long time. Lectures work for me. Should we change a tried and true method of teaching?
These are up online if you want to read them later. Okay, now, as that fades out. So I do want to point out, even though you can, I notice a lot of people sort of frustrated with her tone. I love videos because a lot comes through more than just the content. If that had been written out, I think we wouldn't see the attitude there. It's interesting on both sides. The attitudes are not always healthy. And so it's an interesting, tough problem. I kind of feel it's a third rail of what I cover. When I talk about teaching, we get a billion comments and people are up in arms. If you say teaching reform, some people think it's great, some people think it's terrible. So I'm not gonna even play this. I want to get to some discussion in the room here. I also want to invite anyone here, no matter whether you're a professor or in higher ed or not, to make a video and send it to us. I'm still collecting footage and trying to put out more. It's chronicle.com/lecturefail, and I think it's a really interesting debate, and I hope it at least calls attention to the question that we're talking about today. And you know, hopefully we can get some answers too. If nothing else though, just to kind of raise awareness of the fact that these forces are all out there, and I know that people have said in the past the lecture is dying and it's never died, but you know, I think some of the things that we showed you today, I think there's something a little different going on this time. So I'd love to open this up for questions if we could. Oh yeah, this is great stuff. Right.
And you can't, most classrooms don't have any flexibility unless it's a massive lecture hall. So like a small 30-person, and all at that point you might end up having people pay attention to is the back channel. So then at that point, there's, you know, different learners are learning in different ways, and they've got different modes of learning and all these other things you have to sort of account for. And at the end of the day, you can't really guarantee they've been exposed to all the content that the curriculum is required by the university to expose them to.
In other words, if you take the advice of trying these new things, it's actually a lot harder and can be a lot more expensive, I think, because if you have to staff it, you have to make it work right. Yeah.
I just want to make sure that I'm clear in my perspective.
Sure.
I honestly don't think the difficulty, I think it's important for some people how hard it is you have to work, but I think that's an oversimplification of the idea because I think literally, and that poor professor came across really harsh and really out of touch, but the reality is there is some truth to having students actually tend to what you're trying to do.
Both sides do have to play along at some level. Cool. Thanks for that comment. Yeah, right. One row back. Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me. I was schooled on this and I lost. Could people, the next question from now on, could you come to the front? It is a podcast that will be available, I'm told, in a couple weeks.
Hello there. In terms of framing the question of the lecture and technology, I'd like us to consider the broader case about improving education for people overall. Mm. And in other words, we have opportunities for teaching better in the classroom, but also teaching outside the classroom, online courses, Khan Academy, et cetera. And how do we get the best effect overall? Do college education focus a little bit more on the presentation style to engage the students and then use the recorded lectures as almost a supplement?
Mm-hmm. And like a video textbook or
exactly,
something.
Exactly. Different students learn different ways. Some get more of the lecture. Some get more just watching the video.
Well, I do think that the trick is one of the advice that I've gotten on the lecture fail page, and so there are a lot of comments coming in. I encourage people to check that out. But a lot of people are saying that actually there's no training for teaching or very little. That this is a systemic issue, as I said at the top. And some of the points that came through in the PowerPoint presentation that rolled by was that, you know, if you're going to have a bunch of adjuncts who are not trained to teach, or if you're going to not reward teaching and instead reward only research, well, then it's not a hobby. Teaching shouldn't just be a hobby for the people who are paid to do it, where they feel like they're doing it on their own time. It should be something that, it just makes sense, right? If you say this is the thing that people are paying for, it should be something that's supported by the system. Exactly how to do that, I think that basically there are people that could do it and there are trainings that go on. A lot of the trainings I see are actually about how to use Twitter, though, whereas it seems like there's other ways to address it, maybe how to use a flipped classroom or something instead of just tool by tool. Because maybe you know how to use Twitter, so you wouldn't show up for that class. Yeah. Well, and actually, one of the things I was going to say, if we had more time, is that one thing I feel like I'm doing more and more. My wife was a teacher in the Chicago Public Schools for a couple years, and she learned that. I mean, that's lesson plan time. And when I started teaching as an adjunct, she was basically like, "You have to know what you're doing every 18 minutes. You need to switch activities. You can't just go up there and expect them to just listen to you for an hour. That you need to look at it like a lesson plan. Like every 18 minutes, we need to be doing something different." And I think that. There's a way that's a challenge. I don't always do it. Yeah, at the microphone.
I was gonna say, yeah, I used to work over at a medical school, and we actually have a company that spun off from that. And their first day of class, everyone gets a laptop with all of the required software they're going to need installed.
Right.
They were moving away from a lecture format because everyone knew that med students can read really fast. And it was almost a student revolt. They said, "This is the stuff you need. Here's the textbook. Read this stuff before class. That's required."
Right.
And they made classroom attendance mandatory, and they're trying to get rid of the lectures. They've done pretty good. They've done a lot of interactive where they're supposed to have read the stuff, so you just call on a student and say, "Hey, what, you know, tell me
teach
about
us.
This."
Yeah,
well,
that's
you
great.
Just ask the student a question, and they have to tell you about this, and then they put case examples up. The thing we do is pay per patient, so you have a patient comes in, you have to do the diagnosis, you get feedback. You do about 40 or 50 of those before class. So when you get to class, you already know all the differentials they're going to talk about today. You're familiar with the features. So you already know the stuff. The instructor can get straight into the actual stuff they can do. They don't have to explain to you stuff you could have read.
And I think that we're to the point where you don't have to go around the class the first day and be like, "Do you guys know how to use YouTube? Do you have a computer?" You know, there's a baseline of technology that's relatively new.
Right.
I'd love to talk to you more offline afterwards
sure.
about
yeah,
that.
They
that
just
sounds great.
That day one, they just said, "Here's your laptop." You know,
that's great. Thank you for sharing.
So in regards to online course materials and video lectures, it seems like the real threat is not to professors but to the business model of higher education.
Sure.
So I'm curious if if there's a perception of this among administrators, and if so, if you can chat a bit about how that threat is perceived.
I think it's a great question, and it's one that we're as somebody, as reporters tracking this, it seems to have been a kind of a slow uptake by a lot of our readers to really understand that this is happening. And I think it is getting through, though, to answer your question. It's recently coming really to the fore. There was a conference going on this week, I believe, of university presidents, and just yesterday, Sal Khan addressed them and spoke to them. And there was so much Twitter traffic. I was sitting here at South By watching the Twitter traffic, but one of my colleagues is there. But they were basically just like, yeah, you know, these are people running colleges being like, stuff has to change, you know. So I think, and also the pressure. So they're seeing this as a business model challenge. And so if it's a systemic issue, then if they're starting to see it as a something to focus attention to, I think that's why we're going to see more, we are going to see more experiments. How long they stick around. There's a buzz in the air right now among administrators to try something, I guess, is what I'm hearing.
Hi. As a current student in higher ed, I kind of want to throw a question to you as well as open it up to the forum. I mean, and it's a real-world problem of the student goes to a lecture yep. and he hasn't read, and how does he get, you know, something out of the lecture so that he's not, you know, going on Wikipedia or, you know, reading the New York Times? And is it a matter of just providing the resources in the classroom beforehand of, you know, try and follow the PowerPoint, or is it, you know, providing some type of path where it's still related to the lecture, but you're getting something out of it, even if it's not directly from the teacher?
It almost sounds like what you're saying is like, what if I missed an episode of Lost and now we're on tonight's episode and I have to watch it? And it is a challenge. I mean, it is the problem of college students is they're busy. And we're all busy. And sometimes it's busy working two jobs to pay for college. It's not always partying. And I think that's the buzzword that I hear is adaptive learning. And that room full of computers I showed you at Virginia Tech's Math Emporium, that is really the model of that is that students don't all have to be in the same spot. They don't all even have to be on the same week. So some of those students that individually could be like last week's work that they're working through a bunch of exercises. And so then they need to catch up. So, but it's all because it's all modular and online. But of course, the downside that I hear from people is that we're taking the human completely out of it. And a lot of people aren't ready for that. I mean, even some students, some of these students who wrote, made on those videos, but others do want the lecture and they do want it to just be passive spoon fed and they just want it to be the way it's always been. So it's not that every student is excited about all this. And you're one of the things students then have to do is keep up, or you have to try to think about how can you make something adaptive so that yeah, if you fall behind, you're not going to fail out. Because we don't want retention to get worse at colleges, I think. I don't think anyone wants that. You know, President Obama is talking about retention being important. You don't want to put in something that's going to make it worse. So it's a great point.
To me, what's interesting is that we're trying to maybe change the way the teacher interacts with students.
Yeah.
We also have an issue with the resources. You know, they're trying to get to that point, but it's still, you know, for most of my classes, it's a book, and the highlighters are pens.
Yeah. I think it's a great point. And just for the speed round, since I think we're running out of time, do you want to ask your question and we can at least float them out to the room?
Thank you. I thought this was a great talk. I was just going to ask about blended learning.
Yeah.
We design apps for kids, and I think there's a big push for this mentorship idea.
Where are you? Where are you teaching? Or where are you working?
We're working in Africa with kids. So you have to design apps are very inexpensive.
Sure.
And so the kids will learn the book stuff at home, and if they pass the quiz that's graded by the iPad – so teachers don't have to grade the quizzes anymore. So if they pass the quiz, the kids get to go actually build a farm using Perimeter, using the things that they learned on the iPad. So the kids get an incentive to actually use what they learned to do what they've learned.
That's
and
interesting.
And I was just interested if you knew if any blended learning initiatives like
that. So blended learning is a buzzword that I didn't have time to get to. It's basically the idea of why do we go to class twice a week? Maybe we just meet once a week for the 50 minutes. A lot of administrators like this idea because everything stays the same. It's still the 15th century painting with the laptops in it now. But what it is you only come once instead of twice, and you can actually jam more classes in your university without spending any more money. And then you use online tools to do the other part. That sounded a little cynical. I think there's actually some potential benefit here. I don't mean to be taking sides. But I think that there are some positives to this blended learning idea. And then places where – it's very difficult to get people together in a room, it could be really the answer to scaling education. They have executive MBAs where you meet 1 week every now and then, and then you do the rest online. And this has really worked for – and these are expensive, so people must think they work, right? Otherwise, they wouldn't pay all that money.
Just a bit of a side comment. In Switzerland and Austria, they're bringing in programs into schools where kids actually have to stand up in the lesson.
Really?
They have a speaking podium.
I've never heard of that.
The results are amazing. The actual performance of the students goes up by 20 to 30%.
That's an easy one. Everyone stand up right now.
Well, it's the thing because they're moving all the time.
Huh. So I definitely want to know more about that. I'll have to talk to you offline.
They even have nets in the classrooms where the kids actually crawl across the nets.
Wow.
Check it out.
Well, we have a meeting at work. Journalists don't like meetings very much, and so we have a stand-up meeting every day that's supposed to be 10 minutes, and it really is pretty much 10 minutes because we have to stand up. So people are basically like not going off on tangents or telling jokes. It's like they get out of there. I like it.
Very fast on the topic of the lectures.
Yeah.
Talking outside the classroom, the recorded lectures that Khan Academy or MIT can present to distant students. One issue there is the how to certify those, how to be sure that the actual student is taking the class and not someone else taking it for them and things like that. And so I'll invite everyone to think about this after you leave the lecture, how to do that. Electronic IDs may be very useful for that, both in the university setting and outside university. Think about how to bring that certified education and degrees to a bigger audience around the world.
Well, I just want to say one thing to that. I recently wrote a story. Thanks. MITx, which is something I didn't mention either, but they're now giving badges and degrees for it's an experiment, but they're going to basically offer a certificate for like cheap, like $100 or something, if you make it through their online exercises and pass some tests. But they are doing a lot of research as part of that experiment into proving who you are. Because they don't want people walking around with their friend taking the thing and claiming an MITx degree. And so that could ruin the whole idea right away. So they've got some of their research team is now focused just on how to figure out by keystrokes even if you are who you say you are. And there's all kinds of experiments. I don't think anything is finished yet. But they really want to solve that. Actually, they tell me that what they're going to do for the short run is make you go to a physical testing center, show an ID, and then take the test there. So to get the certificate, you are going to have to go to a room because it's not a problem that's solved yet. It's a little bit like that. It's an interesting model. It's very much like the computer industry has done. Well, thank you, everyone, for coming. And do send us in a lecture.